The two principal reasons for the enormous influx of Americans to La Ville Lumière during the 20s were the Volstead Act and the fantastic exchange rate for anyone coming to France with U.S. dollars. The Volstead Act, aka Prohibition, became the law of the land in America on January 17, 1920, meaning if you wanted to drink, you either had to find a speakeasy or quit the United States. For those who opted for the latter, the relative strength of the dollar throughout that decade made living the life of a poor, struggling artist in Paris neither poor nor all that difficult, my grandfather Ernest included. In his memoir, A Movable Feast, Hemingway wrote nostalgically about how Paris was in the early days when we were very poor and very happy. But Ernest certainly wasn't starving. Phil points out that while a bottle of imported whiskey was certainly prohibitive for the average working-class Frenchman, it was relatively cheap for an American armed with dollars. Carter, get back here. Don't you run away from me, boy. I ain't gonna hurt you. This was a lie. The man very much intended to hurt Carter. Thankfully, Carter knew it. So he pumped his legs and clutched his satchel and strained through the murk to see which line of cars was chugging down the tracks and out of the yard. The wail of the horn blasted Carter's eardrums, and he stumbled across a rail. Several rows away, there came a familiar metal clanking. A rusty but colorful chain of cars clacked by, catching speed and whisking away the mist. Carter could see clearly now. He jumped over the tracks and raced to keep up with the moving train. From down the yard, the cars kept coming and coming and coming. Red, blue, green, yellow, purple, redder, black, orange, redder still. Every Tuesday, Miss Graham sent Beth down after arithmetic to do the erasers. It was considered a privilege, and Beth was the best student in the class, even though she was the youngest. She did not like the basement. It smelled musty, and she was afraid of Mr. Scheibel. But she wanted to know more about the game he played on that board by himself. One day she went over and stood near him, waiting for him to move a piece. The one he was touching was the one with the horse's head on a little pedestal. After a second, he looked up at her with a frown of irritation. "What do you want, child?" he said. Normally, she fled from any human encounter, especially with grown-ups. But this time, she did not back away. "What's that game called?" she asked. He stared at her. "You should be upstairs with the others." She looked at him levelly. Something about this man and the steadiness with which he played his mysterious game helped her to hold tightly to what she wanted. "I don't want to be with the others," she said. "I want to know what game you're playing." He looked at her more closely. Then he shrugged. "It's called chess." Now, Bobby Jean, who'd had a quickie Reno divorce from her lion no count, but handsome by all the pics, first husband, had done a little snooping around and found out that Daddy had millions in oil money stocked away in Farmers First National Bank in Stephenville, Texas, though we lived in that ranch house with the peeling paint and the swamp coolers, a black and white television with a screen no bigger than a third-class porthole and strips of colored plastic across it. Green where the grass should be at the bottom, blue at the top where the sky might be, pink in the middle for the faces.